Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together toward best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this.
I feel weary of national politics and the giant steps backward we're taking in climate resilience. I feel weary of research studies, weary of social media, weary of stories, weary of managing life with chronic illness. I'm CEO of my health, and I'm tired. I'm on vacation and in a dip. Please, I crave inspiration. I need a recharge. Several weeks ago, I recorded a conversation with Amy Facecorn. I'm just now getting around to listening to and editing that recording. Amy and I met virtually in the International Akimbo Forward Link community and discovered we both live in the Boston area. At a couple of in-person meetings, we talked about improv and homeschooling. Common interests. Who knew? Please listen in to our chat.
Good morning, Amy. It's good to see you. Good to hear you.
It's good to see you too, Danny.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. I'm excited to talk to you. How do you introduce yourself in a social situation?
So I say, I'm Amy. I'm from Swampscott, Massachusetts. I am a wife and mom. I have two beautiful children that are teens. I work as a coach and a writer and a facilitator. I try to seek balance in all things.
Where were you the first time you realized that health was fragile?
Probably as a child, when my grandfather was sick. I didn't really understand what was happening, but my mother's father had been diagnosed with colon cancer. And we had just moved to the Boston area from Chicago. My mother was very torn at that time, trying to be there for her dad and be there for my brother and me. I remember getting a sense of something being really wrong. Mm-hmm. And loss followed that.
Yeah.
My mother's brother had been ill, and I had known about that in the shadows. People didn't talk about health in the 1970s and 80s the way they do now. I felt it was very hush-hush then.
How do you adapt your coaching practice when the person has chronic illness or disability, or the team that you're working with has somebody or people on the team who are chronically ill or disabled?
That's a great question. I think because I myself have a chronic illness, I bring empathy to that situation in terms of knowing that the scale of what you want to change and how you want to grow is sometimes impacted by the level of illness you're experiencing. In other words, you can't be and do everything you may dream of being and doing when your body is slowing you down. Mm-hmm. And that is a process with a lot of emotion associated with it, a lot of needing to be in acceptance and self-compassion. So I try to drive the conversation around that and really acknowledge how disruptive illness is when we think about the path that we want to be on and the journey we want to be on, and that this is life throwing a major curveball in that process. And so how do I embrace that while not shutting down to myself in the process? That's the challenge of the coaching work, I think.
The range of possibilities is different. Like, I know that when you're in pain, it is certainly hard to think about growth because you're trying to get through the moment, and it's hard to think about too many steps ahead. But there's still
growth to be had, whatever your circumstances.
Yes, I think what happens is sometimes it's hard to see that your growth is happening sometimes more internally than externally at that moment. Meaning when you learn to manage pain and move with the pain and not resist it, you're undergoing an internal process of growth as a human being that many people never experience, even though they may not have those kinds of challenges put in front of them. They still aren't understanding the natural law of what it is to be human and to grow. I have felt that a lot when I've been sick, that the externals don't necessarily line up with what's happening inside. And I think our culture has a hard time understanding that it's possible to be growing and changing and even leading when you're in a place of not being able to do externally what is expected of you or what you would like to do.
When I think about health, I think about the physical, mental, and spiritual dimensions of health. And I have found that some of the most spiritually healthy people are the least physically healthy. Certainly, there's a component to leadership, which you just mentioned as one component of spiritual health when it comes to leading. You can be physically quite healthy and not so spiritually healthy when you're leading. One of the things that I've been mulling over, and one of the reasons that I wanted to talk with you because of your sets of experience that made me curious about you, is that I try to think about what does it mean to be the CEO of your health and your health team. When I think about being a CEO of anything, I think about managing, leading, and learning as components of being a CEO. Certainly, when you have chronic illness, it's harder or it's different to be thinking about this idea of being a CEO while you're on this moving train. When I met you, there were several things that interested me in exploring this question. One of them is that you're into improv, and the other is that you homeschool. Let's take the improv first. A couple of years ago, I led a session at the National Caregivers Conference that was called What You Can Learn from the Clowns When You Go to the Doctor's Office. I learned quite a bit going to Boston Children's, where I used to work, and talking with the clown supervisor and talking about improv. Can you talk a little bit about the art of improv and how that has helped you, gosh, in dealing with your own health issues, homeschooling, being a coach? What drew you to it? Can you just talk about a little bit more about that adventure that you're on?
Sure. I have a younger brother, and he was very gifted in the performing arts, and he went to a performing arts camp when we were kids where he wrote a musical and did improv. So I followed him to that camp one summer when I was a high school age student, and I had told myself the story at that age that my brother was the talented one, so I didn't allow myself to pursue it. But it always was in the background I wanted to explore. And interestingly enough, in terms of how this ties into being a CEO of your health, when I was very sick with a flare of this illness 2 years ago, mm-hmm. I started to come out of it slowly. It was like about a good 8 month experience till I was coming out of it. And as I did, I said to myself, you have to do this now. You know, something inside me had shifted. I realized I can't always just leave it as a dream. So I went to do it. And I'm often the oldest person there. It's really challenging. It's not as easy as it sounds. The lessons that have emerged
are really incredible. The foundational principle is yes and, meaning someone makes an offer and then you can't say no to that. You have to somehow acknowledge it and then add to it. And when you come into relationship with someone from that perspective, it makes it very difficult for an argument to ensue. Often creativity flows, positive emotion flows. But lately, the big one for me has been discovery versus invention. So the notes, as they say, you get from your instructors are often try to discover it more than invent, meaning don't come with an agenda to the scene. Be open to discovering what it's going to be about. And for a control freak perfectionist like myself, that is very hard. But that principle helps me so much. For example, to tie it back to being a CEO of your own health, when you get a devastating diagnosis, in particular of a chronic illness that you know has no cure and that is really just going to be about managing going forward, that first response is, this shouldn't be happening. Why is this happening to me? I've lived with my illness for almost 30 years, so I've lived with that on and off many times. So the spiritual discipline of when it's worsening or when it's blocking you and your abilities to lean into that and say, what can I discover? What is this here to teach me? It's very similar to what is the improv scene here to teach me, in a sense, right, as a character. So that has helped me feel more in control of my health.
Yeah, and control is right? Absolutely monster.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. And then with homeschooling my children, coming to that place of what's emerging in my kids, what are they showing me their natural talents are, their natural abilities, their natural curiosities that may not line up with traditional school curriculum, and how can I just yes and that? How can I support them continuing down that path of discovery without my own agenda being laid out on top of it? And that's hard as a parent because you want your kids to succeed. Every parent, no matter what, wants their kids to succeed and to be happy.
Yeah.
So that can be really challenging at times for me, but the control comes from not controlling.
Can you give me an example of that with your kids?
Yeah. So my son from a young age really was drawn to the internet and video gaming. I am a person who said, before I became a parent, I will never have games and we will never have an Xbox. We still don't have any of those consoles. I came to it with a lot of judgment and a lot of finality about it in my own mind, preconceived. But what I ended up having to do was really see what was it about this that was so appealing to my son, because he has been a very passionate gamer. And it can be very easy to be afraid about its addictive qualities. But the more I would sit with him and be curious and talk to him and see the value, how he was forming relationships, he was exercising his reading and writing skills through chat on the game. He was meeting people from all over the world. He was teaming up to level up, and all those interpersonal skills were at play. His dexterity was at play. I just had to really let go of that and say, okay, how can I support that? So my husband and my son built a PC, a gaming PC, where they literally sat there with the parts and put it together. That was a big coming around for me around what is discovery and what is control. When I think about illness and a lot of what you talk about on your podcast and what you manage with the kind of illness you have, so much of life ends up being living in that cycle. That's the gift of the illness. It never feels like that when it's in its worst place. But that is what it's been for me.
Yeah. So how do you approach health and illness as a homeschooling parent with your kids?
When I've been sick, when I've had to be on the couch for extended periods of time.
You have a cyclical thing where you have exacerbations and remissions. Okay.
Exactly. So during this past flare I had, I was down for the count. And that was really hard in terms of you feel like you should be doing things and how is this going to get done? And I had to really learn to let others help, including let the kids help, let them step up in household tasks and things like that. I had to let go of, with homeschooling, what we should be.
Right.
Whatever, reading Huck Finn right now or whatever it is, you know? And I had to look at it as another life lesson for them.
Yeah.
And the flip side is with the illness I have, there is a theory of genetic, you know, kind of runs in my family.
Okay.
So there's always a fear in my mind.
Yeah.
And I was diagnosed with it at 19. So okay. I always have this fear. What if they are burdened with this like I am? Now, mine's been fairly manageable, though there's been times it has not looked like it would be. And I think, what would happen if they were really ill? I go down the what if path sometimes. And then I have to pull back and say, first of all, the gene part you can't control.
Right.
But you can control lifestyle factors. So we are really trying to stay physically active. But I also just recognize what I can control and what I can't, and that you just lead by example. Even if you're not feeling well,
yeah,
you're still leading.
And now a quick break to hear about our sponsor, Abridge. I see many clinicians on a regular basis. Way too many. I'm appalled at how little I can remember when I get home. My wife asks me, what did she say? What about this medication or that test? I'm happy to remember half of it. To help me remember everything, I downloaded a new smartphone app called Abridge. Now, when I talk to the doctor, I ask if it's okay to record our conversation. Nobody has said no yet. I push a big pink button to record, and after I'm done, the transcript from our audio appears. Not the whole thing, that's too much, but sections around medical keywords like fatigue, pain, tests, exercise, meds. Now when I'm done, I can share my visit with my wife, and she can listen to exactly what the doctor said. Abridge was created by patients, doctors, and caregivers. Check out the app at abridge.com. ABRIDGE.com. Or download it on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Record your health conversations. Let me know how it went.
How do you set people up to take control of their lives? Well, you give them opportunity to. That's a really big part of leadership. I remember the best boss I ever had. I was a VP of quality for a managed care company. I was 3 months into the job and having supervision with my boss, who was the CEO. And he was saying, so how do you think it's going? And I said, well, I don't think we're really moving along at the speed you'd like us to be. And he said, what do you recommend? And I said, well, frankly, I think we need to start with you. When I said that, like, oh my God, this is a career-ending statement. But he was like, okay, 7:30 to 8 o'clock every morning. It's your agenda. Every day I'm in town. It was so empowering. And then I had to get my shit together. You can't just make a statement like that, be given the gift that I was given in terms of respect and control. And we did great things. It was an ideal thing. And then in my last real job, where I was the boss, I had a similar where I had hired somebody and her recommendation was X, Y, and Z. And I was like, just didn't make sense to me. Then I stopped myself and I said, oh my goodness, I hired her because she is good at this. What am I doing? And so I stopped and I said, okay, I'm really sorry. You guide me. I'm telling you those stories because just to follow up on, I think the way I've learned and the way I've mentored is to seize control and run with it, and to cede control and follow As a leader, there's times when you're a leader, you follow. It just makes sense.
A lot of what you just said is very spiritual. If you're a reader of the Tao Te Ching, for example, that's the yin and yang of leadership, is knowing when to act and when to observe. In my healthcare, just in recent years, I have finally understood that. And I've also been really clear how I lead my own health, like the CEO. I realize what I can get where and from whom. And I don't try to impose my needs on providers. For a long time, I used to look to Western medical doctors, who are still the core of my treatment when I seek care that doesn't involve self-care practices, right? So I used to go to them for emotional reassurance. I need a metaphorical hug. I switched providers recently. And this new provider, it has zero bedside manner. He's very kind, but that's not his strength. His strength is he's totally up on research. He's totally up on best practice. He just gets the job done. He's very first, do no harm, which in my illness, I really appreciate, because the impulse to intervene pharmaceutically intensely can be there. And he's more of a let's hold off.
Yeah.
So I realize the gifts he gives are the ones I need. And he doesn't need to be my counselor or my psychologist.
Right.
Right. He can just be my Western medical provider, specialist.
He's a coach in that area.
100%. He's leading by example. He pushes back a boundary that says, you don't need that from me. Remember why you're here. For this is what I can give you. So just take that, because that's all you need from me. The other thing, I get them from my family and my friends. I get them from alternative providers like a massage therapist that I see, things like that. Because I think people with chronic illness demonize the providers in Western medicine. I can't do that anymore. Yeah. I have been in that place, but I can't. I have to recognize, what is this resource for? Just like a head of a company would say, like you've said, subcontractor.
Yeah.
Like, my specialist is really good at what he does. His subcontract, I will renew. If someone isn't providing that, then you can say it's time to go. But that's huge growth for me. But I feel like I had to go on a long journey to get there. I wasn't there for most of this illness at all.
That's so interesting. I have a chiropractor who's just a genius. And the combination of physical therapy and chiropractic in terms of building a routine of habits, of physical care that are so important having a progressive illness, whatever they say, I'm going to do it. That's a dimension of leadership. I've been really struggling with the challenge of leading in this healthcare system and what that means, and how do you do it? How do you support other people who are on a journey and trying to lead? And I'm a friend, or I'm a coach, or I'm a listener. Maybe I'll go back to improv, because I'm thinking there's something to the yes and about being supportive to people who are on a difficult journey. What can I do to help them manage to lead, to learn? Maybe only being present and planting a seed. And then somewhere down the line, whether I'm there or not, doesn't really matter, that seed might sprout. But that's really hard to generalize. I'm comfortable with the one-on-one. But if I think about what are the lessons for groups of people, well, that's harder. And I think having reasonable expectations is something, like expecting teachers to raise your kids. That just never made any sense to me, but I'm a homeschooler too. We never did expect teachers to raise our kids. Doctors in hospitals, they have a skill and they have a service that they provide. You or yours need to be present and set your boundaries and whatever, but to expect them to raise your kids to get you healthy.
Right. And I think there's a lot in Western culture around the desire to eradicate all illness eradicate all physical suffering is really strong because it is so hard. And I understand where that comes from. You know, that's what drives the research. That's what drives the use of war language around illness. I'm a fighter. I'm a survivor. It's right. A very warlike way of addressing what arises.
And we're going to cure everything.
I appreciate the progress so much. Like, I vaccinate my kids happily, so I'm very grateful for all the discovery, right, to go improv that took place, and then an invention came out of that. But there are aspects of the achievements of Western medicine that are just incredible and such a gift. To what extent can we alleviate suffering, but then at some point also accept that suffering may be part of the journey for all of us ultimately, right? So yeah. I feel like the expectations are often on Western you're going to save me. You're going to cure me. You're going to make this all go away. You're going to make everything better. You're going to make it so it's like this never happened. I used to think that often with my illness too. And I just got to a place, I think I had to hit a kind of a bottom to realize that I can't ask that of these people. Yeah. All I can ask them for is vigilance around my overall state of disease, treatment and intervention that may help me. Like you said, I have to make informed choices with the help of a partner. I have a very sensible partner who's a trained nurse like you, who works in the healthcare administration, sees behind the curtain. So he's such a powerful resource in my pocket. I'm so grateful. And I feel for people who don't have that in their lives. Yeah. All you can do is take that team, realize what it is and what it's for, right? And then take from it what you can and then let the rest go. And that's really hard. It's probably easy for me to say that. Like, someone else with a level of illness and challenge would probably see it even differently. That's the way for me, though, with what I've been given. This is the way that I can do it and feel sane and feel like I am also leading, like you said, and showing my kids, this is how I approach this.
One of the things in your stuff had this quote, do not keep children to their studies by compulsion, but by play, Plato. How do you think play fits into this, either for you or for your kids in relation to health?
Well, I think it's when you think of health more like in a game-like way, right? Because it can get so, oh my God, it's so serious. And if you read blogs and if you read all the research that the media is constantly, you know, disseminating, it's so daunting. It's like, should I be a vegan? Should I meditate or not? There's so much content and you're almost like drowning in content. If you realize that you can access information whenever you want and then look at it more as what's the game of what does it mean to be healthy from a game standpoint? That's when you get physically active, doing activities you enjoy because they're just fun and not because there's any end result or achievable outcome at the end. It's just for the joy of doing it, right? Like playing Frisbee, or hiking in the woods or whatever.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And then the same with food, because food can be so loaded. And in our family, my kids have been challenged with eating from the very beginning. It's been hard to have them be open to new foods. My daughter and I she was sharing that she discovered she loves herbed cream cheese on a bagel when she was in New York this summer. And I was like, oh, that sounds so cool. Let's find a recipe and make the herbed cream cheese. That's a yes. And that's, I like bagels with cream cheese. And it's not the, well, we shouldn't have dairy and carbs. We should really have a salad instead. It's like,
yeah, right.
That's fine. Let's make the herbed cream cheese and have it on a bagel.
So like, really, literally gaming. One of the things I see with gaming is it's just trying a lot of stuff and something doesn't work when you don't progress. And so you have to try something else. And to me, sometimes I think the game, the play is that, did it work? Yes. Yay, it worked. No, it didn't. Okay, what am I going to try now? And part of managing, leading, and learning in your health is that constant experimentation. I'm trying something, it worked. Well, I tried it, it didn't work, but you know, I'm in a different place right now. Maybe it'll work now. And then having this array of solutions that may or may not work, but the power that you feel of knowing that you've got a couple of things you can try is huge in managing lots of symptoms.
And I think also embracing mystery. This is a really tough one, but my illness is considered an autoimmune disorder. Is MS also considered
yes.
autoimmune? Yeah. I'm not a medical doctor. I don't play one on TV either, but I do feel that I can say, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's enormous mystery associated with autoimmune conditions, meaning why is it some people are completely incapacitated by that illness and others have this very mild form, or why does it flare seasonally for someone or whatever, right? There's all these unknowns that the medical community is still working to discover. Part of the spiritual practice for me has been to embrace that. I really don't know why. Why have I sometimes been enormously ill and other times I've been relatively symptom-free? Can I attribute that to a medical protocol, like a pharmaceutical protocol? Maybe. Sometimes not, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And can I attribute the lifestyle change? I never know. And when I know I'm in a place where things are flaring up, I have to go to that mentality, like you just said, of, okay, I may need to experiment with the medication differently this time around, or I may need to try a lifestyle choice or an alternative practice I've never tried or whatever, because there's never going to be one solution that you can implement ad nauseum. It's just never been like that for me.
Never. I agree. I have two solutions that work a scary amount of the time. And one of them is to drink water. And the other one is to manage manageable stress. That those two just make so much difference, both preventatively and when I feel myself sliding or I smell an exacerbation.
Can you say more? Because when we were together the other night, you mentioned that. And I told my family, so just a way of passing on that leadership, that I tried to do that, where I said to my family, we've been talking about water intake and how to know how much. So can you say more about what that has done for you when you do that, or how that alleviates?
Well, I mean, so practically you're asking.
Yeah. What's your experience of that? Yeah, exactly.
Well, my experience is it's so direct. I'm feeling weaker. I'm having symptoms of pain, urinary tract, dizziness, proprioception. I mean, just take the laundry list. And the first thing is drink a glass of water. Mm. And it helps. So often. And, you know, there's no side effects. It's just scary how often that works. You're not asking me the pathophysiology of that. Good, because I'm not sure. I just know dehydration isn't good. That's what I get out of it.
Right, but it seems like such a basic thing.
I forget to drink water.
Yeah, we all do. And sometimes
it's just.
Right.
And so isn't that I just think that's precious. It works 70% of the time. I mean, that's nuts.
A quick break to plug myself. See the show notes or my website, www.health-hats.com, and click on blog podcast for more information, to subscribe, or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks.
What do you think I should be asking you that I'm not, related to what we've been talking about? What would you like to add?
Well, I would just like to add that I love this analogy of running a business for thinking about how we approach health. I think that is just a fantastic connection, that it's very timely given the way that healthcare is changing, kind of how we think about health and where the locus of responsibility for health ultimately lies. That's not to say blaming ourselves for illness, because I've done that too. I've been in a place where I say,
my psychology has caused this or whatever, you know, especially with autoimmune, it can be like the stress piece can be big and related to flair for me, certainly. And so it can be easy to get in a blame cycle. So I don't mean it like in the sense of blame yourself for your health, but just acknowledge the agency that you have. Mm-hmm. I just feel that that's really helpful.
So agency as in control.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that you need to ask for help. I listened to the Tim Ferriss podcast recently with Eric Schmidt, right? He's the CEO of Google, or was, I don't even, but he was talking about working with a coach and that the power of that, you know, kind of even to bring it back around to coaching, that leaders ask for help.
Yeah.
Leaders don't do it alone.
Right.
And when you're sick, you often feel like, I don't want to burden my family. I don't want to burden my friends. But in fact, in asking for help, you're freeing everyone up to do what needs to be done that's going to make things shift in whatever way. It doesn't mean it's going to make it all go away, but the shift of taking the burden of doing it all away from someone who's suffering. Like, that's the nature of being human. And that's very hard to do when you tell yourself, I have to do it alone. But if you're really leading the company, your company of one, your body and your mind and your spirit, then you have a whole team helping you. But they'll only help you if you tell them that you need the help.
Yeah. I don't remember where in my career this occurred, but it was very early. It was that to stay at the top of your game, you need a coach. It might have been Atul Gawande. I think he wrote a essay in New York. He was, as a surgeon, he was thinking, to stay really good at surgery, you need a coach. And I just thought that was brilliant. I say I'm the CEO and I have all these subcontractors, but for me, really, I have a lot of coaches. I have a coach that when I'm feeling grief, I have a coach. I've been going to the same physical therapist for 10 years, but I probably actually seen her 7 times, but it's something like less than 10. And because she put me on a routine, it made sense to me. And I've gone, as I've progressed, I've gone back to get a tune-up on my routine. And so she's that coach. My PCP, you know, her attitude towards me is, you're still an old white guy. You may have all this stuff going on, but you're still an old white guy. And that's my responsibility. I'm here to help you coordinate all this medical stuff and deal with that. You're still an old white guy. I think there's coaching to be had in all sorts of mysterious places. Okay, last question. Anything you want to ask me?
So if you're the CEO of your health, how do you feel your company is performing at this moment?
I think it's great. It's a silver lining of having this seriously annoying situation is that I feel like I am operating at peak performance. And I don't know that I've ever felt that before. You know, not to say that I get discouraged. Oh my God. But I mean, I shouldn't be doing this good. It's working. And that's just so exciting. Just feeling that is self-fulfilling. But it cascades. Knock on wood, it's going great. I don't wish it on anybody. No, I won a lottery I didn't buy a ticket for, and I would just as soon not, but I got no complaints. Life is good, which is why I'm so interested in this. I want to stay good at this.
Well, you are.
Thanks. So anyway, thanks for the question. And thanks for your time. This has been lovely.
For me too. I think that you are... I think you're leading in ways you might not even recognize by doing the work you do and sharing of yourself the way you do. I hear your voice and I echo it so much. I'm really grateful for all you're doing.
Oh, thank you. All right. Take care. I'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thank goodness. I'm not so weary now. My company performs well. Thank you very much. I have seized control. I can ask for help and cede control. And I know the difference. I appreciate the lesson Amy teaches here about the yes and improv approach to best health. In my language, it's accept what is and build on it. I have MS and I'm operating at peak capacity. How cool is that? What have you learned recently that inspires you and may inspire other readers and listeners? Go to my website, send me an email, comment on your podcast app. Talk to us. Onward.
Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.